From Latrobe to Mexico, Lebanon to Meadville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is budget season in Harrisburg, and while most of the discussion focuses on spending, the taxes needed to pay for that spending are also up for debate. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion by Gordon Denlinger and Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business. And from a potential bailout of the nuclear power industry to a futuristic transportation system, state government is once again looking to pick economic winners and losers. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Representative Brian Ellis of Butler County resigned his seat in the legislature this past week in the wake of a sexual assault allegation. A woman has accused Ellis of having sex with her against her will while she was unconscious. The incident allegedly occurred in 2015 after the two had attended a fundraiser at a bar. Ellis has denied wrongdoing, but said in a letter to House Speaker Michael Terzai that resigning was in the best interest of his family and district residents. Ellis had been removed from his leadership position after the allegations surfaced. The seat will now be filled in a special election, which has not yet been scheduled. It is a reliably Republican district, and it's likely the Ellis resignation will have little impact on the partisan makeup of the House. Former Governor Dick Thornburgh, whose steady hand led the state through the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster back in 1979, has officially retired from the K&L Gates law firm in which he was a longtime partner. Thornburgh was elected governor of Pennsylvania in 1978, running as a prosecutor who could clean up the corruption that plagued state government during the Milton Schaap administration. Governor Thornburgh did just that and then went on to serve as U.S. Attorney General during the Reagan and Bush administrations and also served as an Undersecretary General at the United Nations. Beto O'Rourke, the former Texas congressman who lost the U.S. Senate race in Texas last year to Ted Cruz, became the first Democratic presidential candidate to campaign in Pennsylvania. O'Rourke made an appearance in State College, marking the official kickoff of the presidential campaign season in the Keystone State. Voters will likely be seeing a lot more campaign appearances, as the field of candidates seeking the Democrat presidential nomination will be larger than the then-record 17-candidate field vying for the Republican nomination 4 years ago. Pennsylvania's April primary is relatively late in the process, but given the number of candidates running, it could be in a pivotal spot as the primary and caucus process unfolds. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. As budget makers get down to business in Harrisburg, the taxes needed to fund state spending are the topic of discussion. Here to take a look at that process and how the outcome might affect you is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined today by Rebecca Euler and Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Today on the program, my teammates from the National Federation of Independent Business, Executive State Director Gordon Denlinger. Gordon, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
And NFIB Legislative Director Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Great to be back. Thanks, David.
So, you know, we're here in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. The budget process is continuing. The hearings are over. And, you know, one of the things I just want to put out there, I think is like a structural problem in Harrisburg that we talk about taxing and spending at the same time, when in fact, what we should do is have a system of taxation that makes sense for us, that maximizes collections while not stifling growth. And then once we have those revenues, we match spending to the revenues. We don't do that. We don't do that. Mostly what happens is that the process of the budget, that the elected officials come up with how much they want to spend, and then they figure out at the same time how they're going to pay for it. That's not the way tax policy should work.
Absolutely, Dave. Spot on. You know, we have a legacy tax system left over from an earlier era, and it's really time for Pennsylvania policymakers to get our state back in the game. We've seen some significant reforms at the federal level, the TCJA, Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which have really spurred the national economy. And Pennsylvania is benefiting from that. But we could be doing some of the same things right here in Pennsylvania. And it's time for us to take a fresh look and set aside some of the sacred cows, quite frankly, and move forward into a new structure for Pennsylvania that gets us back in the economic game.
Because, Rebecca, even though the national economy is doing better and Pennsylvania is doing better as a result, you know, our system of taxation here at the state level is still an impediment to growth.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We are, like Gordon said, we are seeing sort of unprecedented growth right now because of things that are happening at the national level, tax cuts and also regulatory reform has been really helpful, especially to small businesses, but all businesses, really. That's really spurred on growth. We're seeing small business optimism continuing at very high levels. Job creation in the small business area is through the roof right now. It's at a record high level. We know that businesses are trying to expand. They're doing very well as a result of some of these federal changes. But like you said, at the state level, there are some impediments to investment and growth that businesses have to deal with. And we'd like to see some of those changes because there are certain provisions of the state tax code that actually disincentivize investment in business.
And, you know, and I want to cover the waterfront today. We're just going to kick it around and hit some of these different things, but I know that NFIB, you know, representing a small business, privately held business, that there are a lot of your members pay their business taxes through their personal income tax. They file on the personal return, and that there are pro-growth tax advantages in the Pennsylvania tax code for C corporations, for publicly traded companies, but that those don't exist for the privately held companies like yours. What changes could be made to help the privately held companies to compete?
Well, you're right that there certainly are some things that C corporations would like to see. NFIB is about one-third C corps and two-thirds pass-through entity.
Okay.
So that's the split, small business to maybe slightly larger. But so, you know, we've talked and the governor has addressed the idea of cutting the CNI rate from 9.99%.
It's the highest in the nation flat rate at 9.99%.
So that's a big bar item, you know, for a lot of folks. Certainly that is on our list as well. But as you mentioned, some of the benefits to smaller enterprises, we would love to see an alignment with the TCJA Section 179 write-down provisions, which basically gave an immediate first-year write-off to $1 million in asset purchase. We'd like to see that at the state level, in addition to it being at the federal.
Yes, and what Gordon is talking about here is the depreciation of assets. That it's a standard tax treatment for business purchases. That when businesses, especially capital intensive ones like manufacturers, buy equipment, that those things wear out with use. They wear out over time, and so the tax policy had been that you get to write off a little bit of that value each year. A way to spur private capital investment is to bring forward that tax benefit in time so that you get to write off the fullness of the depreciation in the same year when the item is purchased. And a lot of times that tax break is what makes the purchase possible in the first place. But when businesses buy new gear, new equipment, you know, it expands production, which again – inevitably leads to expanded hiring. So this is a way to actually spur growth, but accelerated depreciation, I mean, two things. Number one, that it was only for the C corps, and that Pennsylvania tax policy was decoupled from that so that benefit was not extended Because in other places that the state law, you know, it like snuggles up against the federal law, but in this case, they decoupled them so that that benefit wouldn't flow through state tax policy.
Absolutely. And you know, one small example would be, suppose you own a pizza shop and you'd like to upgrade your ovens, you know, this would be a way to, again, get that immediate write-off, that immediate expensing in year one when you make the purchase. An amazing benefit. And if you're a manufacturer of pizza ovens, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to do well mm-hmm. by extension. You know, $1 million is a bigger number for small enterprises. So there's a lot of things that can fall into that $1 million threshold. But yeah, connecting the federal and the state on that issue would be huge for us.
Because most states, you know, in my understanding, that most states didn't decouple, that they allowed that benefit to pass through. And of course, in those states, it makes it easier for businesses to buy that new equipment.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We're at a competitive disadvantage in Pennsylvania for attracting business growth because of that very reason. In Pennsylvania, the Section 179 expensing under Pennsylvania law for small businesses is limited to $25,000. Whereas under federal law, it's $1 million, and most states, like you said, are coupled with the federal law. Another example I'd like to bring up, because we're such an outlier, is like-kind exchanges, which allows owners of businesses to defer personal income tax. So we're talking about small businesses here, moms mm-hmm. and pops, mm-hmm. personal income tax when they exchange property for similar property. So you can exchange, for example, if a business wants to exchange a vacant piece of their property that they don't need mm-hmm. for a piece of industrial property that they do need to grow their business. Under federal law, they can do that. They can incur no tax liability as a result of that exchange. But under state law, it's not permitted at all. It's that tax write-off is not – that tax deferral, I should say, is not available under state law. And the amazing thing is that not only can corporate taxpayers in Pennsylvania take advantage of that, but every other state in the union allows it for small businesses – but Pennsylvania.
And I'll add another one to the mix here while we're working through things that small businesses would really benefit from, and that would be a net operating loss adjustment.
Yes.
You know, the capping of that. Pennsylvania is one of the few that places caps for all businesses, but the only beneficiaries of NOL at this point are the larger enterprises, the C-Corps. Pass-through enterprises have no NOL provision in Pennsylvania. And as we said at the opening of the show, for our membership, two-thirds are pass-through entities paying taxes at that personal tax rate. We would love to see an NOL provision for our pass-throughs.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Gordon Denlinger and Rebecca Euler from NFIB. So, and Gordon, I want to just like take a little time to explain what this means. So, you know, net operating loss carry forward, it's wonk speak, but there's no better way to put it. What it means is not all companies earn profits in nice, tidy 12-month chunks. That for a lot of businesses, business is cyclical, that there are ups and downs. We see this in the metals industry, price fluctuations. We also see this especially with startup businesses where you lose a lot of money when you are, you know, getting going and it's only profitable later on. And so this provision of the law, it evens out the tax bite so that you can apply your business losses from the recent past against your current and tax liability when you get profitable again. And this is a standard business practice. This is a standard tax provision in 48 states and under the IRS code. But Pennsylvania, rather than allowing a business to use the fullness of those losses.
The tough years in startups are the first few years, of course. We all know that. And they go through the J curve where they lose money for a few years and then that curve starts to come up and they cross over profitability. But those early years, you know, that tax bite when they move into profitability, if they don't have the losses of earlier periods to offset against, can really be a major drag on growth, on success. And so, yes, as you're saying, absolutely, we would love to see an NOL provision for pass-throughs.
Because Rebecca, one of the challenges that we see in Pennsylvania, one of the warning signs is that Pennsylvania's business startup rate,
yes,
is very low compared with the rest of the nation.
Yes, that's exactly right. Statistics have shown that startups in Pennsylvania are low compared to other states, and I think that is because, I mean, as we're talking about these tax changes, these, you know, little, I would consider them tweaks to the tax code that would really make a big difference to a lot of small businesses and small startups that help them invest in their business. But because we're dealing with these sort of outdated, you know, non-modern, I don't know how else to say it, but these tax provisions that just need to be changed, the tax laws are acting in Pennsylvania as a barrier to growth and investment and a barrier to startups.
And certainly also the attitude that state government has much too often, which is if something new emerges in the private economy, somebody comes up with a new way of doing things or a new product or service to offer, that the knee-jerk reaction of Harrisburg is, ooh, there's something new, let's tax it.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, and of course, just the most recent example of this is, you know, just the never-ending desire to plunder the natural gas industry with a new additional industry-specific tax just because it exists. And so that's something where we've been at the forefront. I mean, obviously, the natural gas opportunity is it could be transformational for Pennsylvania to help consumers, to help stimulate business. But that there's been, you know, a monomania on the part of a lot of people in Harrisburg who just are so in love with the idea of a pot of leprechaun gold waiting to be claimed, that that even though these companies pay every business tax there is and pay, of course, the impact fee tax on top of all that, that again, that the mindset of Harrisburg is if it moves, tax it.
Absolutely. And Governor Wolf is 5 for 5 calling for the severance tax. I mean, he's batting 1,000 on this one. And you know, the politics around that, thankfully, have prevented any movement on it to this point. The other thing I thought was interesting this year, he's, of course, come up with his Invest PA program, which is a bonding scheme to go out, bond up $4.5 billion. Total payments on that are over $8 billion by the time we'd be done with it. But, you know, I'm having these – as the gray-haired member of this panel – the guy who has some gray, I'm going to think back to the Schapp administration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a while ago.
Uncle Milton.
When we went out and bonded to try to fix Pennsylvania's roads and bridges and ran into the brick wall, literally, on that scheme. But, you know, these ideas have a bad way of coming around again and biting us. So hopefully we won't go back down.
And this is why we need to. And Gordon, this is why I'm grateful that you would go back to the early 70s, because these are lessons that need to be applied. I know that there are a lot of other smaller, I mean, you call them almost nuisance taxes, these, you know, small niggling things that are a burden to administer, and we should consolidate, get rid of as many of those things as possible.
Absolutely. There are a laundry list of taxes, and, you know, it builds complexity into the lives of small business owners, the mercantile tax per capita, the sort of non-standard sales and use tax system that we have in the state. You know, you have to design the computer systems to try to deal with it, because, you know, it isn't a standardized, simplified system. And I think that's really at the heart of what we're saying here. Are there ways to simplify the system, standardize statewide, and really bring some sanity back into Pennsylvania's tax structure?
And when we approach that question, and we absolutely should, we need to not fall into the trap of the Governor Rendell's tax commission back in the early part of the century, when Tom Wolf was in fact the Secretary of Revenue, that that there was no allowance for the idea that maybe government takes too much of the private economy. You know, it's like so it's got to be revenue neutral, meaning that government must take as much as it takes now. It's just, you know, do you insert the needle in the left arm or the right arm? It's like, well, no, we have a problem with overtaxation. It isn't only what taxes we have and how they're collected. It's also that there's too much taken out of the private sector.
I think that's a great point. We started out the talk here today about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and if it has proved anything, it is that lower taxes incentivize growth. They create jobs and create investment and growth in the economy. We need to talk about how to tax less.
Right. It's tax rates. Lower tax rates will bring in larger tax revenues.
And total yes. tax burden is really what businesses measure. You know,
yes.
what is the total
yes.
of this laundry list? And ultimately, what is it that causes them to load up and move to another state? It's the total burden. So all these pieces come together, and Pennsylvania needs to get back in the game.
Well, thank you, folks, for being here, for the work that you do, obviously. Very proud of our teammates at NFIB. And thanks to the listeners for spending time with us. This is all we have for now. But, Rebecca, where can folks go to learn more about you and NFIB and the work that you and Gordon do there?
They can find us at NFIB.com or on Facebook and Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Gordon and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Governments, both state and national, have a primal urge to tinker in our formerly free market economy. Sometimes governments are moved to such intervention out of ideology, such as the currently in vogue strain of socialism coursing through the Democrat Party. Intervention is also born of arrogance, as elected officials and deep state regulators believe they can do a better job running the economy. And often, intervention comes at the behest of the private sector itself. Such is the case here in Penn's Woods, as two examples of government picking winners and losers have generated headlines in recent weeks. One is an effort by a failing industry to survive, the other, a state agency exceeding its mandate. To wit, the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission recently awarded a $2 million contract for a feasibility study to determine whether a cross-state hyperloop should be built. Now, this raises a wide range of issues, not the least of which is the financial instability of the turnpike itself. The Pennsylvania Turnpike is a ticking fiscal time bomb that may soon blow up the entire state budget. Back in 2007, Governor Ed Rendell and lawmakers hatched a scheme to have the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission toll Interstate 80 and divert a substantial portion of the revenue to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. The federal government refused to allow the tolling of I-80, but the turnpike was stuck making annual payments of $450 million to PennDOT. This has not only triggered substantial toll increases on the turnpike, but legislators learned during recent budget hearings the agency has missed making several payments to PennDOT and likely will be unable to make this year's payment. Worse, trucker associations have filed suit against the turnpike, claiming the siphoning off of toll revenue to non-turnpike-related projects is illegal. If they are successful, and the chances they will be are high, the turnpike will be on the hook for billions, and PennDOT subsidies will be a thing of the past. Given that scenario, and the fact a hyperloop falls outside the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission's charter to run a highway, the decision to squander $2 million to study a futuristic mode of transportation was ill-advised. The company awarded the study built a test track for entrepreneur Elon Musk in 2016. A hyperloop would put passengers and potentially freight into pods and propel them at speeds of 600 to 700 miles per hour using a vacuum system. Several companies are working to develop such systems, which do in fact show promise, especially for the movement of freight. But those private firms are exactly who should be refining the technology, not the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. The federal government is sticking its hands into the mix as well, recently announcing the establishment of a non-traditional and emerging technology council. There is, of course, no better way to retard or kill the development of such technologies than to clutter their pathway with government councils and commissions. Another effort to put the foot of government on the scales of free enterprise is legislation designed to bail out Pennsylvania's nuclear power industry. This is an example of the industry itself seeking government intervention in a bid for self-preservation. The fact is, nuclear power has become uncompetitive in the energy marketplace due to the development of the nation's fossil fuel resources, particularly natural gas, which is plentiful in Penn's Woods. While some in state government are seeking to tax the successful natural gas industry more, others are advocating the subsidization of an energy source that simply can't compete. There is also a proposal to make nuclear power part of the state's alternative energy mandate, meaning requiring a certain percentage of energy must come from nuclear power, even though it is not the least expensive source. Either a bailout or alternative energy mandate would mean one thing. Taxpayers and/or ratepayers will be paying hundreds of millions of dollars to protect an uncompetitive source of energy generated by otherwise highly profitable companies. Such interventions as these rarely end well. In California, a government-inspired high-speed rail project was recently canceled after billions in state and federal tax dollars were squandered. High-speed rail, hyperloops, energy generation are all functions that can and should be left to the private sector to develop and to implement. When government picks winners and losers, there's only one certain outcome. Taxpayers will be losers. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPGM-FM in Danville, WWEC-FM in Elizabethtown, along with WCED-AM in Dubois, Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, now a little over a week away. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel, Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation, Kay Coles James of the Heritage Foundation, Mark Janis from the Liberty Justice Center, Selena Zito of the Washington Examiner, Tim Gagline from Focus on the Family, Congressman Scott Perry, Cliff Maloney of Young Americans for Liberty, and numerous others will also speak. There will be panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.